This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Any of you non-members listening to the Monday podcast may not be aware of a weekly public service broadcasting service we carry out every Friday. It's called Francis Murphy's Guide to the Weekend Sport on Television, and the title is somewhat self-explanatory, albeit Francis leaves most of the day-to-day operations to her son Kieran at this point. Last Friday, he made the remark, the very prescient remark, that the Ulster Lions match in the URC was an unmissable sporting event. Unmissable in the sense that it was on so many TV stations at the same time that you simply couldn't miss it no matter how hard you tried. And you've been proven correct here on once again. I did stumble upon it on Friday night, just on the one TV station.
Of course you did.
It may have been RTÉ, as I recall correctly. But this might help to explain why I keep seeing these press releases trumpeting the record-breaking viewing numbers in the URC this season. So what's all the fuss about? Simon Hick joins us to explain. Hi, Simon.
Hey, fellas, how are you?
I'm all right.
It's like that stat where they say, you know, 50% of all people watching television at this moment were watching, you know, Program X, which, you know, is grand, you know, and it is kind of a fairly good barometer of it all. But if 50% of the TV channels at that exact moment are showing that exact thing, then, you know, it's basically just people on television who can't find their remote. That's basically what we're dealing with.
It's like those horror movies, you know, where the bad guy takes over all the channels. That's the URC at the moment.
Is Jay-Z the bad guy? Nah, he's not a bad guy, surely. We await this week's press release, but they seem to come out every week. After round two, this is an example after round two, the United Rugby Championship has recorded over 1 million viewers for a single round for the first time ever, just 1 week after setting a new viewership record for the league. With international viewing figures, audiences from URC TV and consolidated reports, that's always what you want in a banging press release, consolidated reports, due after round five, these figures will grow yet again. Average viewership figures across the UK, Ireland, Italy and South Africa have proven to be greater than the initial forecasts, and with some of the biggest games still to come across the next 16 rounds and the knockout stages, the URC is on course to shatter previous viewing figures right across the season. Okay, you've made your point, Jay-Z, all right? You've made your point. But the point is, there are people watching this thing, and most of them watching Munster by the sounds of things, because certainly at that point, they had the two most watched games after the first two rounds. And why not, Simon? They're scoring tries, and they're involved in scandalous decisions, or at least scandalous from a Connacht point of view.
Well, just on the figures, right? The fact that there's new country involved, so there are new fans, new teams, new broadcaster, and more games. So the weekly figure is going to go up no matter what. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. Well,
so if you've added four teams from a new country and that broadcaster is showing those games, then your weekly figures have to go up.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when they're talking about breaching the 1 million viewers barrier for the first time ever, I mean, you know, it's a little... I'm not even saying it's disingenuous. I mean, it's just you're not exactly comparing like with like, because there's eight games for a start, when in the Pro 14 there's only ever going to be seven games on a given weekend. I kind of feel like... You know, new competitions sending out press releases are going to do what they're going to do, you know. And
they're going to get my attention. Is that what you're saying, Murph?
Yeah.
I'm going to be the hype man for the URC today.
Yeah. But I mean, what I will say is, you know, 300,000, over 300,000.
Yeah, the peak figures are good.
For Munster against a team that no one in Ireland had ever actually seen play before, other than on a Lions tour once every 12 years, basically. You know, so it's not like it's Munster against Leinster. or, you know, Munster having a particularly tasty rivalry against Glasgow, as they seemed to do a couple of years ago. This is just basically Munster are bringing in those, you know, that number, you know. No, so it is kind of interesting, even from the point of view of just the fact that these games are on terrestrial television, and they're on terrestrial television on RTE.
Yeah.
And that's just making a big difference. It is a big, big difference.
And they're available to stream. They're available to stream as well. They've got it's this multi-platform model they've gone for. They've got their own streaming service now and all the rest of it. Si.
But you're also watching, you know, Gerry Flannery, Murray Kinsler, and these kinds of figures analysing the game. Donal Lennon on co-coms with Hugh Cahill. And it's like at, you know, Friday evenings, Saturday evenings. And I know it was on air before with some of the similar broadcasters, but I literally could not get air. I have Virgin Media, and I could not get air. And air were trying to get me a way to watch it, you know, because I need to for my job. And they still couldn't find a way most of the time. So it was buried. And now they've got it, like, I think doing a really good job. And there's been a few good games. And as you say, a bit of controversy, like, as football has, you know, Ronaldo and nation states taking over and all the rest, and they hog the headlines at the best of times. I was kind of watching, I don't know if you saw the offside kick, or some people debate it was an offside kick in the Munster Connacht game when Tadhg Byrne looked ahead of the kicker and in the slow-mos. And
don't you worry about that, Simon. I was all over it.
Yeah. And I was thinking afterwards, I think almost certainly 99% sure it was the wrong decision. But would I take the incorrect decision quickly than the correct decision really, really, really slowly over and over throughout the 80 minutes? And I don't know, but I kind of, the flow, it was gone the other way last season, and it's happening with VAR, obviously, but just quick, maybe the overall emphasis has been on quick decisions and accepting that you're going to get them wrong anyway some of the time.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I don't think the sort of in-game broadcast dwelt too long on Tadhg Byrne being ahead of the kick. I mean, I've seen things from Three Red Kings on Twitter today, which does actually suggest, or was that yesterday, where
there's Tadhg a chance Byrne, he's on side. Yeah.
Tadhg Byrne's the back leg.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I don't think that's what the TMO saw. I think the TMO just cracked on with a fast decision, as you said.
Yeah. What's weird is if they pore over every little tiny detail, and then they let that one go, that's strange. But if the overall emphasis is fast decisions, then I take that. So the culture needs to be one way or the other. You can't skip over what looked a blatant offside. Maybe it wasn't, but it probably was. And then to pour over every other little decision. There's got to be, you got to land on one side or the other.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, like more broadly, we haven't really spoken too much about the URC. But, you know, I've watched actually quite a bit of it over the last couple of weekends.
Yep.
And, you know, it's such a blatantly obvious point that I feel stupid even bringing this up, you know? But I'm a lot more interested in watching Munster when Peter O'Mahony and Simon Zeebo or Johnny Sexton is playing for Leinster. I mean, I hope that at some stage the penny is going to drop that if Irish rugby really is in quite bad financial trouble, that what the provinces and what the IRFU have to do is play their best players more often in big games.
Flog the players until they drop.
I mean, I'll put it to you like this. What massive benefit has Ireland gotten from protecting the players more than any other country in world rugby?
Well, we won a Grand Slam and two further Six Nations titles in the Joe Schmidt era. That was pretty good.
We won twice as many Grand Slams as the whole previous history of the nation.
Yeah, the whole previous history of the nation. I mean, why don't we just focus on professional rugby here, you know? Like, the fact of the matter is, like, we have still massively underperformed at World Cups. And, like, isn't this protecting the players basically, isn't that what that's about? You know, that you want to make sure that your best players are fit and ready to go at Rugby World Cups. Isn't that the idea behind this? Like, the Six Nations happens every year. A lot of the time we're being told, well, let's just throw over the Six Nations. Like, a Six Nations is a development tournament for the World Cup. I mean, that's obviously just...
Well, you could argue, though, Murph, you could argue it's also... Well, I do think the Six Nations and the grand, and winning Grand Slam is huge. And I think players are safe for that. I don't think that's something to be sniffed at. But also, there's a player welfare issue. I mean, I don't want to be too flippant about it when I'm saying that flog them until they can't go on anymore. But, you know, we know all about the longevity or lack thereof in the careers of a lot of rugby players. So if they are in a system, as they are in Ireland, where... And even at that, there's, you know, lots of players have to retire early. But if they're being given every chance, then surely that's something to be applauded. No,
at some stage you're a rugby player, you know, and like you have to play a certain amount of games, and that's just the reality of the job. And you know, even from the economics of it, like, you hear this stat every year at the Pro 14 final, that which will now be the URC final, as Leinster like romp to another win in this competition. You know, you just have to admire Leinster's panel. You know, they used 147 players in this year's tournament. You know, and at some stage you're like the IRFU are paying all of these rugby players. You know, I mean, it is kind of bizarre that you'd have to use like 60 players to win an 18 game league or whatever. Not, you know, more games than that, obviously, but like, there's an economic downside to just having like these ream after ream after ream of rugby player on professional contracts. Like, it's not even so much that, right? Like, that's just more of an aside. The fact of the matter is, this competition is really important for Irish rugby, right? The URC.
Yep.
Like, it's really, really important that the Irish domestic, that the four Irish provinces have a competition that's actually really, really competitive and like grasp the imagination of people like me, for whom the Pro 14, you know, has in the past, kind of, you know, it would be meandering for months and I wouldn't sit down and watch it.
Especially when the European Cup isn't until December now, Murph. So you'd essentially have no meaningful club rugby until then if you didn't care about the URC.
Yeah. Like, the fact of the matter is, people will watch if you're good players are watching, and people are not really that interested in watching Leinster's fourth choice, fifth choice back row still beating teams in this competition, you know. And if the Welsh regions were getting crowds for the URC, then the Welsh regions teams would be a lot better, and then the competition would be better. So, I mean, I just think it's like, I've been interested to watch it because, you know, there, Simon makes an interesting point about the quality of the analysis, the quality of the graphics have been totally overhauled. Like, it looks like a pretty good product to me watching it. And the crowds have been pretty decent, given the fact that there's, you know, there's...
Thomond was great atmosphere, actually, yeah.
Yeah, really, really good. Like, this is a thing that you would be interested in watching. But, I mean, you know, how many times have we tuned in for, like, December 26th, December 27th, the Interprovincials, and literally no one who's playing for Ireland is playing in these games? Like, it's important that the best players play in these games. And as you say, like, the player welfare issue is absolutely correct, Owen. But I was glad to see that there were fewer games in the URC than there were in the Pro 14. That's what needs to happen. Fewer, higher quality games will lead to a much bigger interest in the competition as a whole.
Yeah, well, you can't just keep playing them. At some point, they'll get rested.
Oh, of course,
rested.
Of course. But,
maybe that should be against Italy in the Six Nations as well, you know? Why don't we, you know, if we're mixing things around, make the domestic league, finally commit to the domestic league and make the most important competition? Because that's what France and England are going to continue to do. They're going to keep thinking, and correctly so, that their domestic competition is the most important one. They make the most money from it. It has the most prestige. It has the most history. And Leinster and sometimes Munster have been winning the league through depth more than anything, as you say, because their fourth choice number eight is better than the Dragons' first choice number eight. Now, that's actually starting to change. It looks like the Scots and the Welsh are improving a little bit. And for sure, the South Africans are going to get better. So there's more jeopardy in every single game now, especially now that the Irish provinces have to qualify in their own little mini league to get out into Europe. And it's putting Connacht under all sorts of pressure. But it just feels like every game feels far more important now. Now, it's only a few games in, so we don't know. But it's great to see Johnny Sexton playing. It's great to see the battle for out half. And that's something we might get onto, Owen. It's just the situation at the moment for Ireland.
Like, go on, let's talk about that then.
But the squad gets named on Wednesday, it looks like, for the November series. And we spoke endlessly last year and before that about the out half situation. And the fact that Sexton's going to be 38 at the next World Cup. And we now, the backup guys, it's looking like he's even put more distance between himself and then. Don't forget, it's partly him playing well. He was the best out half, I think, of the last Six Nations. He didn't go on the Leinster or whatever, but he will be 38. So it's this decision trying to constantly weigh up the short term with the medium term. And Carberry is playing terribly. Like, since the start of this season, it's the worst he's played since he got all those injuries. Billy Burns is not the answer. I've been watching for Ulster again. He just isn't. Harry Byrne keeps getting niggles. We don't know, really. Hasn't played enough. Management don't want to seem to give Jack Carty another chance, which is strange because they keep giving Billy Burns and Ross Byrne loads of chances. And it's almost like they made their mind up that to distance themselves from the Joe Schmidt era and that horrible World Cup, that Carty, they had to distance themselves from Carty as well. Not that he's been that consistent, but he's been really good this season, completely outplayed Joey Carberry at the weekend. And if you're picking on form at the moment, the starting halfbacks will be Nathan Doak from Ulster passing to Johnny Sexton, and the backup would probably be maybe Luke McGrath passing to Jack Carty. But they probably won't be who they go for. But Doak is miles ahead of the other scrum halves at the moment. Conor Murray hasn't been playing, but Doak looks like the future. He really does at scrum half. But you'd love to see Irish management react a little bit to the form and bring Carty in and Doak in for sure, for the at least to the squad.
And you know, a final point on kind of what the URC can offer as well is, like, again, it's like at some stage, if the competition is good enough, then Nathan Doak playing as well as he's been doing for the last couple of weeks actually matters. Instead of everyone just being, well, listen, you know, it's the Pro 14 or it's the URC, like, who cares? You know, let's let him do it in the European Cup, and then, you know, maybe then we'll bring him into a squad. Whereas with the domestic league, where your best players are playing 70% of the time, even 70% of the time, you can then pick on form, you know. But the way it's been for the last 6 or 7 years is, well, the only way you can show form is by playing in a domestic league that no one really cares about anyway. So, like, what does form even mean?
Yeah. And it's the rhythm of the season, isn't it? It's much more like, if it's a weekly thing, you get a sense of the rhythm and the form of a player much better than, oh, let's wait until December and see who he plays against Toulouse.
I do quite like the European Cup, though, as well.
No, I love it. I love it. Absolutely. And it should be like a little adornment to the season as opposed to the thing we wait on to see how good a player is.
We're just back from Berlin with thanks to Aer Lingus. We had an incredible time, as our World Service members will be aware. The highlight of the week was our live show featuring the brilliant Jonathan Liu. Played a clip in today's football pod of Jonathan talking about the Saudi takeover of Newcastle. Alan Clark was there too. Alan's one of only two Irish-born players ever to play in the Bundesliga. Played for a team called Blau-Weiss 90, who got promoted to the top flight in the 1980s with the help of their left-sided midfielder from Lucan, who has stayed living in Berlin ever since. And I think it's fair to say Alan has some stories to tell.
So it was Patrick's Day in the Irish Harp pub. We were having a party there, all the Irish guys there, my friends. So I actually got to go there that night. My brother was over on holidays, because I know I'm not going to be playing tomorrow anyway. So I woke up about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, made my way up to the stadium, and, you know, a little bit giggly, you know, I wasn't falling around or anything like, but, you know, definitely under the influence. And one of my colleagues, the Holger Gerke, he said, just sit as far away from the trainer as you can on the bench. So I'm sat as far away from the trainer as I could. And one guy has been brought on already. There's only two substitutes. And there's about 10 minutes to go. The other substitutes are warming up. And I'm still sat there. So I'm thinking, I'm safe now, I'm home. And the left foot back, full back, I never forget, even going flat, got injured. And I'm the only left-footed player, of course, on the bench. And I just remember, he just bent over and went, Alan, get your stuff off, yeah? And I honestly didn't even get to stretch. And it was a free kick for us. I'll never forget it. On the right half side of the pitch. And I actually took the free kicks when I was actually on the pitch. And it bent it over the wall. The keeper slipped and it went into the top corner.
Yeah, that's a good live show kind of story, isn't it? It just had to end with him sticking it in the back of the net or into the top corner.
I mean, like the ball went into the top corner. He didn't have to mention that the goalie slipped. But, you know, he's a very humble man.
He was a very humble man indeed. If you're expecting detailed recollections of the night the wall came down, as in the Berlin Wall, not the wall
elsewhere.
Trying to stop his free kick. Look elsewhere. He was in the scratcher, okay? He woke up, didn't know what kind of, some big party had taken place that he wasn't aware of.
Took him by surprise, it's safe to say.
Took him by surprise. You can hear that entire interview if you become a member. Also, we've got big Peter Schmeichel coming tomorrow. A huge game for his old teammate, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in the Champions League on Wednesday. So we'll have Champions League coverage through the week as well. There's a lot to hopefully entice you there. Secondcaptains.com, €5 a month plus VAT. An absolutely fantastic chat with Alan. Fantastic week in Berlin. It was capped off with some huge news from the Pre-Europa Awards. And that news is that Where Is George Gibney came away with the runners-up prize up against 15 other finalists from around Europe in the Best European Radio Investigation of the Year category. They got a special recommendation, and it's just an incredible achievement for everyone involved. Also, there's a very nice video of the moment on our Twitter feed if you want to have a look. Mark says the winning streak style nervous wave as he stood up to accept the applause was unintentional.
And honestly, Owen, he's been practicing for winning streak from the first time I ever met him. When he was in college, he would literally sit down and watch winning streak on a Saturday evening just to have a laugh at whatever hilarity was going on. So winning streak is a long held and much beloved dream of Mark's to one day appear on that show. So if he was going to go winning streak, he should have gone full winning streak. That's all I'm saying.
Andrew Conroy emailed to say, just a quick heads up, he's probably not the only one, but my 8-year-old went to school today singing the words, "Then we take Berlin." Well, this is a great email, Andrew, thank you. This is in relation to the undoubted winner of Synth Week Live in Berlin, Colin Ratcliffe. We'll give this one another blast for the non-members who haven't heard it yet. This is the Ballad of Jürgen and Union. Please enjoy. Colin, if I've gotten the pronunciation wrong once again, I do apologise because you upbraid me for it in the lyrics to your tune here. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Si.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks so much. Chat to you soon. Then we
take Berlin. This story is from Germany, which is not some magical fairy tale country of castles and dragons. The Union Berlin fans made Klopp cry. Why do they hate Jürgen Klopp so much? First, we did Manhattan.
Then we take Berlin.
Jürgen Klopp.
Union Berlin.
Negative experiences for Klopp with Union.
Union Berlin.
Klopp is quite an emotional guy.
Jürgen Klopp.
Union Berlin.
Once I had a game in Germany, I think it was against Berlin.
Union, not Union, Union, Union.
And we had 31 shots on target. 31 shots on target. They had three. We lost 3-0. So.
Guardiola said, there has to be in football some pause.
Pause.
He's talking all the time about rhythm.
To change the rhythm. Change the rhythm. Change the rhythm. Change the rhythm.
Klopp has not shown that he's able to do this.
Man, how do you play keyboard?
That element of pause has once again baffled him. That is what people will say. Why do they hate Jürgen Klopp so much?
I have no clue in the moment, so give me a couple of minutes and I will have a clue probably.
Very erotic voice, by the way.
Then we take Berlin.
Jürgen Klopp.
Jürgen Berlin.
We lost 3-0. So.
Quite an emotional guy.
Raphael Honigstein.
Jürgen Klopp.
Quite an emotional guy.
We lost 3-0.
Jürgen Berlin.
So.
So I will describe this as boom.
Ooh, what was this? It was boom.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.